Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So you sent us this incredible stack of sources about, well, an event that was kind of a mix of everything, part political summit, part Hollywood gala.
And part, a very technical drawing of balls from pots.
Exactly. We are talking about the FIFA World Cup 2026 final draw, live from Washington, D.C. at the John F. Kennedy Center. And wow, what a night it was.
It was absolutely seismic. I mean, the FIFA president himself, Gianni Infantino, he called it the greatest event that humanity has ever seen.
That's a bold claim.
It is. And that's our mission today, right? We need to go beyond the headlines. We're going to unpack the sheer scale of this thing, this 2026 tournament. Then we'll get into that really unusual fusion of global politics and entertainment. And most importantly, we have to break down the mechanics of that new 48-team draw step by step, because it is complicated.
It really is. Okay, let's just jump right into the scale because
Yeah.
that's the hook. We are now, what, officially 6 months away from this tournament just completely taking over North America?
All of it. Canada, Mexico, the
Yeah.
U.S.
So before a single ball is even kicked, what kind of audience are we talking about for just this draw ceremony?
The numbers are, frankly, just staggering. For the draw itself, you're looking at an estimate of somewhere between 500 million and 1 billion people live.
A billion people watching a draw.
And that's just the appetizer. For the main event next summer, FIFA is projecting that 6 billion people will tune in from home.
6 billion. I mean, that's nearly every human on the planet with a screen.
Yeah.
It makes the logistics almost impossible to wrap your head around.
That's the key insight. The scale meant they had to, completely rewrite the script. This is the first time we've gone from 32 to 48 teams.
Right.
And that change alone balloons into 16 host cities across three massive countries and a schedule of 104 matches.
And there's a great line in the sources to give, especially our American listeners, some context for that
Oh,
number.
right. The comparison they made was that this is like staging 104 Super Bowls in 1 month. Just think about the travel, the security, the broadcast rights for that. It's not just a sporting event anymore. It's a massive short-term economic phenomenon.
And the ceremony itself definitely reflected that scale. I mean, the Kennedy Center, that's a serious venue. It was pure spectacle.
Absolutely. The hosts were Heidi Klum and Kevin Hart.
An interesting pairing.
It tells you everything about the tone, right? It was meant to feel huge, but also, approachable. And I loved that little detail about Kevin Hart's opening.
Oh, he had to correct himself immediately, didn't he?
Yes, he started off talking about being an American soccer fan, but then he sort of caught himself, realized where he was, and made a big point of calling it football for the rest of the night.
They probably got a good laugh.
A huge laugh from the international crowd. It was a nice self-aware touch.
And the guest list, I mean, it was a real who's who. You had cross sport royalty like Eli Manning, Wyclef Jean, and then actual football royalty. Roberto Carlos, Hugo Sanchez.
It was, and the music was just as big. You had Maestro Andrea Belli setting this, very dramatic, serious tone to kick things off.
But the big musical news was the anthem.
The anthem, Desire, by Robbie Williams and Nicole Scherzinger. That is being positioned to be the sound of next summer, for sure.
So we have the entertainment side covered. But this is where the event really, I think, shifted and became something else. It really went beyond sport into global affairs.
It did. And if you connect the dots, it suggests FIFA sees the World Cup as more than just a game. It's a major geopolitical
And
platform.
the political presence reflected that.
Unparalleled, really. You had the President of the United States, Mr. Donald J. Trump, and First Lady Melania Trump. You had Mexico's Claudia Sheinbaum and Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney and Mrs. Carney Fox, all there.
And just to be clear for everyone listening, we are just impartially reporting what the source material you sent us says about the evening.
Yeah.
And the biggest non-sporting news of the night was right at that intersection of leadership and, well, football.
Indeed. This was the launch, the inauguration of the annual FIFA Peace Prize.
Okay, what is that?
It's a new award dedicated to recognizing individuals who have taken, extraordinary and visible actions for peace. And the inaugural 2025 prize was given to the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, during the ceremony.
Now, FIFA is a sports body. So, what was the specific rationale, according to the sources, for them to wade into, you know, such high-stakes political territory with their first ever award.
The rationale they cited was explicitly about demonstrated diplomatic efforts. The sources detailed the historic Abraham Accords, the Gaza peace plan, and also actions that helped ensure peace between nations like the DRC and Rwanda, India and Pakistan, and also continued engagement on Russia and Ukraine.
So FIFA is positioning this as a recognition of political action on a global stage.
Exactly. The FIFA president framed it as recognizing that, you know, that kind of action can be as vital as the unity the sport itself creates. It's a very bold move for a sports body. It effectively elevates them into the world of global soft power.
A very high impact move. Now, shifting just a little, there was also a major philanthropic announcement.
Yes, this was the creation of the FIFA Global Citizen Education Fund, a partnership with Global Citizen.
And the goal?
It's a big one. To raise $100 million to provide education for 100,000 children around the world. So it's a clear attempt to link the massive revenue from the tournament to some tangible global good.
Okay, so that's the spectacle, the politics, the philanthropy. Now we have to get into the heart of it, the draw. This is where it got really complex. Even the draw conductor, Rio Ferdinand, said he needed a boot camp for the new rules.
Right, we're moving from elegant diplomacy to cold, hard mathematics and logistics now.
Okay, so lay out the new mechanics for us, nice and slow.
Right. The basic setup, 48 teams. They're split into 12 groups of four. So that's the first big change, moving from 8 groups up to 12.
Got it, 12 groups.
All 48 teams were then divided to 4 pots, 12 teams in each pot. And that's based strictly on the FIFA World Ranking from November 19th.
And pot one, that's always where the top dogs are.
Correct. Pot one had the top 9 ranked teams in the world, plus the 3 hosts, Canada, Mexico, and the USA.
And the hosts were pre-placed, right? They weren't drawn.
Exactly. They were pre-assigned to groups to make sure the logistics work. So Mexico is in Group A, Canada in Group B, and the USA in Group D. They all get to play their first games at home.
Now, the complexity always kicks in with that confederation rule to stop teams from the same region playing each other too early.
That core rule is still there. No 2 teams from the same confederation in the same group. So, you know, you can't have 2 teams from South America ending up together.
Except
for Europe. Because UEFA has 16 teams qualifying, it's just mathematically impossible to keep them all separate. So Europe is the only exception. You can have a maximum of 2 European teams in one group.
Okay. Now we get to the really intricate part, the pathway rule. This seems like it's about more than just fairness.
Oh, it is. This is about protecting billions in broadcast revenue. It's bracket protection.
So what does it do?
It's designed to make sure that your biggest possible matchups happen late in the tournament. The 4 highest ranked teams, Spain, Argentina, France, and England, were required to be drawn into separate predetermined pathways.
Meaning what, practically? How does that work when they're pulling the balls out?
It's pretty technical. It means when, say, Argentina is drawn, they aren't just put into a group. They're put into a specific quarter of the entire knockout bracket. So if Argentina goes into the first quarter, England has to go into the fourth quarter.
So they can't possibly meet until
the semifinals.
Right.
Or the final. And that's only if they both win their groups and keep advancing. It maximizes the chances that these huge global rivalries are still in the mix in the final week. It's sophisticated risk management.
That makes a lot of sense. And one last layer of complexity. Pot 4 wasn't full.
Right. Pod 4 had 6 placeholders. These are for the 6 teams that haven't qualified yet. Their fate will be decided in intercontinental playoffs in March. So 6 groups still have a big question mark next to them.
So let's get to the results. It was quite a cast of characters helping Rio Ferdinand with the draw.
It really was. Wayne Gretzky, Aaron Judge, Shaq, Tom Brady.
A real Mount Rushmore of North American sports.
It really showed the commitment. And they pulled out some fascinating groups. Group C, for instance, immediately jumps out.
Who's in that one?
You've got Brazil, the 5-time winners, but you've also got Morocco. And you remember, Morocco was the first African team to ever reach a semifinal in 2022.
They're not a dark horse anymore.
Not at all. There's real expectation there. And you throw Haiti and Scotland into that mix, that is a very high variance group. A serious challenge for Brazil.
And we also got a big European rematch, didn't we?
We did. In Group L, you have England drawn with their rivals, Croatia.
The 2018 finalists.
Exactly, alongside Ghana and Panama. But that England-Croatia game, that is immediately a massive must-watch rivalry clash, even in the group stage.
Now, what about the hosts? That's what a lot of our listeners are focused on.
So the USA, they were placed in Group D. They'll open up on June 12th in LA against Paraguay. They also have Australia and the winner of Playoff C. It's a manageable group, but tricky.
And Mexico gets the big one, the tournament opener.
That's right. The very first match of the World Cup, June 11th in Mexico City. It'll be Mexico against South Africa. They've also got Korea Republic and a playoff winner in their group. Huge pressure on Mexico to set the tone at home.
And the reigning champs, Argentina.
They're in Group J. They'll open against Algeria, and they also have Austria and Jordan. I think, given their ranking, it's a group Argentina will feel pretty comfortable with.
And finally, Canada, our third host.
A tough draw for Canada in Group B. They have Qatar, the last host nation, and a very strong Switzerland team, plus a European playoff winner. They will need that home crowd advantage from the very first minute.
Okay, so to recap this deep dive, we've hit the unprecedented scale, that 104 Super Bowls analogy. We've analyzed the fusion of sport and global politics with that new FIFA Peace Prize.
Detailed the $100 million education fund.
And walked through the really complex draw mechanics, especially that revenue-protecting pathway rule.
And things are moving fast now. The full match schedule is announced tomorrow. Ticket sales start on December 11th. The planning is over. It's all about execution now.
We talk so much about structure in the rankings, but I want to circle back to that one bit of chaos you mentioned, those six placeholders in Pot 4.
And that's really the final provocative thought here. Those six spots are going to be filled in March by teams coming out of intense, brutal playoff battles. They're unpredictable. So my question is this. In a draw that was so carefully structured to protect the top seeds, how much chaos could those six late qualifying wildcards actually cause?
That's a great question. They could really throw a wrench in the works for some of these supposedly structured groups.
They're the purest wildcards left in the whole thing.
A perfect analytical point to leave us on. Thank you for sharing your sources and letting us take this deep dive into the biggest global event on the horizon.
My pleasure. And I just love that a ceremony with so much political and financial weight still ended with everyone, all those dignitaries, singing the YMCA song.
A perfectly bizarre and global way to end the night.
Exactly.
See you next time for another deep dive.